Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and under no circumstances approves of the hulling of strawberries. I'm Kevin Day and he is Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, why on earth did you feel the need to share that with the world to general disapproval from South East 25?
Well, I think you will find that many people have described it as a life changer and a game changer. Well, there's always been an issue with strawberries, with that bit in the middle. And if you stick a straw up there, Jaxie, and push it all the way through, you get rid of all of that crap and you can eat more strawberry.
No, you're eating less strawberry, surely.
No, because you're eating all the good bits.
Oh, I see. It's a bit bourgeois, this conversation. It's Questions Day, Kieran, but as we mentioned on last Thursday's pod, there's a couple of new stories that we've held over. One in particular, we're recording this later than we normally would on a Sunday for various reasons, so it's just gone 6 o'clock, and it's probably for the best, because there was a couple of tweets from the Football League this afternoon about, guess who, Derby County. Chris Kirchner's takeover bid is well and truly over. I, to be honest, Kieran, I couldn't quite make out the tone of the one of those EFL tweets. It seemed to me initially that they were talking about pulling the plug. But I don't think that's quite true. But whatever's happening, Kieran, nobody's coming out of this with any credit, are they?
Well, Chris Kirchner has not covered himself in glory. He was given an ultimatum following an ultimatum, following a delay, following asking for extra time. So we got to Friday evening. The deadline came and went that was set by the by Quantumar, the administrators, and he said, "Oh, there's issues." Effectively, yeah, it sounded very like checking the post. Yeah. And this is coming from somebody who is involved in logistics. Now, the whole point about logistics, it's about getting things from A to B to make sure that everything is, you know, arrives in time, so therefore, yeah, manufacturing processes can go. So you would think that somebody who has made a lot of money from logistics, although remember, he claims to have made his money from crypto, would know how to get money across a border. And yeah, the excuses of, well, there were bank holidays in the UK. Yeah, there were bank holidays in the UK, and everybody knew about them. So if you know that there's going to be bank holidays, then you act in advance. There was a bank holiday in the US. Yes, we knew about that, and as did everybody else in the United States of America. Why did this come as such a surprise to Chris Kirchner in terms of transferring money?
Well, also, now, Kieran, surely bank holiday or no doesn't prevent you transferring funds electronically, does it?
It doesn't. I mean, to be fair, the money has to be approved. There has to be anti-money laundering rules gone through. But again, you know this in advance.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, it's exactly the same. If you're moving house, you make sure that you've booked your removal firm, you know, a few months before the date, so you've got them on the right date, so you can shift your gear from house A to house B. So, and since our last show, there was a report in The Athletic, which said that staff at Chris Kirchner's own company, Sync.io, there had been 7 payroll runs where staff had been either unpaid or paid late.
Wow.
His company apparently sponsors the Dallas Stars ice hockey club,
yeah.
And owes them $800,000, according to the report in The Athletic. That money has not yet arrived. So these are huge red flags.
Yeah.
And the more you look at Kirchner, you have to ask yourself, okay, if he is the preferred bidder, let's just do a quick analysis of Chris Kirchner. He's 34 years old. He's never shown any interest in football before. His digital existence, his digital footprint was non-existent until about the last 12 months. He claims to have made all of his money from a crypto investment, which could be the case, of course, not saying that that's not true. He's been conducting half of his tactics through Twitter. You know, not the best way. Yeah, we've not heard a peep from Mike Ashley. We've not heard a peep from the Appleby Group with regards to their negotiations or their attempts of negotiations through Twitter. You know, in terms of non-disclosure agreements, well, if he's blabbering through on Twitter, is he potentially in breach of those? So all of these seem to be unusual events. And then the week that he's supposed to be buying Derby County Football Club, he's off playing golf with Poults and Garcia. And yeah. if I was a big golf fan, perhaps I'd want to do that. But if the acquisition of Derby County is that critical to him, I would prioritise acquiring and saving Derby County Football Club. He does not have that priority. If you look at his history with what happened before Christmas, he was potentially buying Derby and then he fell out and there was criticism from the administrators. He was then supposedly buying Preston North End. He fell out and there was criticism from Preston. Yeah, there is a body of evidence here which suggests that why on earth is he the chosen one?
Yeah, Kieran, I'm just going to jump in there, Kieran, because I suspect you're about to take another deep breath and keep going. when he was initially linked with Preston, which was before his interest in Derby, wasn't it? You referred to him at the time. You said that interest in Preston was not serious. You described him as a glorified tyre kicker at the time, which makes me wonder why he was taken so seriously both by the EFL and initially by Quantumar, the administrators.
Well, as far as Quantumar are concerned, he must have, A, paid some form of deposit in order to access the data room. So that's a way of filtering out complete clowns. So you have to pay money, and that gives you access to the company records prevents complete Looney Tunes from acquiring a club. With regards to the EFL, he has, by all accounts, because remember the EFL said, and I think this was in mid-May, that they were satisfied in terms of the evidence that he had provided to them in terms of proof of funds. Now, you know, we could be recording the Thursday show, and the deal's gone through. You know, so we're not saying it's not going to go through, but. Yeah. The history is absolutely awful. Now, in terms of proof of funds, it's effectively showing somebody a bank balance. Now, without being, I'm not a cynic. But if I was a cynic, what you can do, if you've got quite a few banks and different bank accounts, you can shift money into bank account A, and then you can shift it out again a few days later. So having money in a bank account on an individual day is not necessarily indicative that you have the ability to find the X million pounds in order to buy Derby County. And then you've got to ask yourself, what is he buying? Because he's not getting the property. The club's only got five players. So, and they're in the third tier of English football. And he's supposedly spending 20 odd million pounds for that. Well, yeah, that's an awful lot of money for a set of cones.
That's still on the EFL, Kieran. The tweet this afternoon, I genuinely struggled to interpret the language. I mean, it said there were concerns because the fixtures were being printed soon, but it talked about suspending something or other, a deadline. Some deadline was being suspended, but it also seemed to imply that that meant extended. So could you explain what the EFL stance is now as we speak at 6:10 on a Sunday evening?
Okay, my interpretation of this is as follows. The EFL are completely hacked off with Quantumar, the administrators.
Right.
From a long period of time, Quantumar have been accused of not communicating with other parties. Now, this has come from the EFL. We interviewed Rob Cohig from Wycombe Wanderers, who said the same thing. I also believe that to be the case with regards to Mike Ashley's group. And there was a report, I think it was in the Telegraph, John Percy has been going through this in some detail. And he said there's another group, the Appleby group, and they have tried on numerous occasions to get Quantumar to reply. If we take a look at a press release from Quantumar a few months ago, this is what they said, and this smacks of amazing arrogance. The perceived lack of communication has therefore been both tactical and deliberate.
Huh.
So you know, not talking about now. There is a time. There is a time when perhaps not saying anything you can understand being both tactical and deliberate. Yeah. You know, if I wake up in a hotel where I don't know where I am at 3 o'clock in the morning, there's two naked women next to me, one of whom is wearing a Barry from EastEnders mask. The other one's got an Anne Widdecombe mask. I'm in a frogman suit. There's a bath of custard, looking somewhat disturbed. And then the Baroness walks through the door and she says, "What have you been up to?" Yes, I think my silence would be both tactical and deliberate. But comments just seem completely balmy. Why? They're supposed to be professional organization. And they're saying, we are not replying to people. We are not talking to the EFL, who are the competition organizers. We are not talking to potential buyers. We are not talking to people with whom we're supposed to be in dispute. Or rather, there is a complaint about the club, as we've seen from both Derby, from both Wycombe Wanderers and from Middlesbrough Football Club. And if that's what they consider to be a professional way of doing business, well, fair play. That's their call. It's a strange way to behave.
It is. I know which part of that scenario would upset the Baroness the most. That the Anne Widdecombe mask. I think that would be the that would be the most distressing thing in that scenario. But again, what was this EFL tweet saying? Because it seemed to me that it was a threat. Basically, it seemed to me that they were saying that Derby hadn't provided proof, or Quantumar hadn't provided proof, that Derby were able to fulfil their fixtures for next season, because it seemed quite menacing to me. And also, going back to John Percy in the Telegraph, he's one of the very many people like you, Kieran, who have been exceptionally critical in the last few days of Quantumar. So they are clearly part of the problem and not the solution, aren't they, as you say?
Yeah, it's the equivalent of Ofsted putting a school into special measures. Right. Because what the EFL have said is that we want to be included in all communication with all potential buyers of Derby County Football Club. Right. We do not have faith in your ability to conduct yourself in a professional manner, right, and therefore we want to have an oversight of the process. Because... yeah, we don't know who's pulling Quantumar's strings, but yeah, I think some people are beginning to get a bit suspicious.
And finally, Kieran, let's see if we can give a glimmer of hope to Derby County fans, because everyone's assuming that Mike Ashley is lurking around in the background. But is there any proof of that for those Derby fans that are anxious? Are we sure that's the case? Because he certainly hasn't indicated that in the past couple of weeks, has he? I mean, people are saying, well, that's the way he works. He's waiting for the price of the club to be driven down and then he'll come in. But that seems to be an assumption. Is there a way we can make Derby fans happy and say that will happen?
Well, he is definitely interested, because we have seen a copy of a letter from his legal advisors via his company, Mash Holdings, to the administrators saying, we want to talk. We want to get this done. We want to do this as quickly as possible. And then Quantumar came back with, they effectively said that the offer or the interest from Ashley's group would be insufficient. It would not allow the club to come out of administration without a points penalty and so on. So you know, there's clearly friction between those two groups. He's definitely interested. The other group is the Appleby group, where I think it will have to be a consortium, and they will have to find the money between multiple parties. Mike Ashley is one party. It's essential that this gets done quickly. I'm still very confident that we will have a Derby County playing in League One next season, because there are enough people who want the club to exist.
Well, that's good news. At least it does strike me, from what you've told me about Quantumar and what I know about Mike Ashley, I think he's probably cleverer than they are, is my guess. I think he will probably get round whatever objections. But it's not their job to put objections in the way, is it, really?
Well, their job is to... their job is to act on behalf of the creditors, ultimately. You would also hope that it would be in the creditors' best interest for the club to be sold. The behaviour has been odd. And I know one of the things that's been considered by both football authorities, not just as a result of this, but in respect of a few other administrations, but also something which is, I think, is going, could potentially form part of the government legislation, is to have an approved list of administrators. Because all I would say to people is look at some of the people from Quantamar with regards to what happened when Portsmouth went into administration, didn't cover themselves in glory, especially if you talk to people from Portsmouth, people involved on the fan side of things. They were, I think they weren't angry. They were disappointed.
Okay. Oh, that's your worst reaction, Kieran. That's terrible. I was going to say rattle through some of these news stories, but let's not rattle through them because they're important stories. The people behind 3Key, which is Man City's crypto partner, or was, have been unmasked as the masterminds of a chain of alleged frauds worth over £1 billion, although I'm on about to say that if they were real masterminds, they wouldn't have been unmasked.
Yes. Well, they only unmasked in Scooby-Doo.
Exactly.
This is work done by Martin Callardine, who is very, very forensic in his approach. This is nothing to do with Manchester City. I think what this is indicative of is, as a club, and we've used this phrase, blinded by the check,
yeah.
Do plenty of due diligence before signing up with any commercial partner. Now, to be fair to City, I think they fairly quickly realised that this organisation, 3Key, wasn't the real deal, and they jettisoned them. But by then, of course, the criticisms had started. And if there's one club that doesn't need to sign a deal quickly, it's Manchester City. So I think they could have done more due diligence, more checking around in terms of the background of this organisation. Fair play to Martin and to the other investigative journalists who have revealed some fairly unsavoury issues in relation to 3Key. But the danger is that you get tainted by association. And you know, City are not part of the fraud. City have done nothing wrong from a legal point of view. But those people who like to criticise Manchester City have one other thing which they can now criticise the club about.
Yeah, and I think as well, being fair to Man City, because I actually had to research this for something different. Man City, right from the start, as you say, as soon as they realised there was an issue, they were the ones that pulled the plug. But they also insisted that they did do due diligence on 3Key, which is odd because it's essentially a non-existent company. But and like you say, it's strange that a club like City would be blinded by the check. But more bad news for crypto fans, those of you that are still left. The crypto token hyped beyond belief by Inter Milan and some Croatian international players has plunged in value by 98% and its website has disappeared.
Yes, this is an organisation called Football Stars. And they signed up with the likes of Romelu Lukaku and Ashley Young, Kovacic at Croatia and so on, who these guys went on to, you know, their personal social media sites, and they all said the same thing. I love crypto and I love football, and effectively endorsing the Football Stars product. Now, there is a saying that if you don't quite understand something, don't put money into it.
Huh.
I've heard
that quite a lot from Ali, funnily enough, over the years.
And the buyer should always beware. But at the same time, does football have a responsibility? Because why are these organisations with their products so keen to associate themselves with football? Mm. It's because it gives them two things. It gives them legitimacy and it gives them normalization. If somebody as well-known as Romelu Lukaku, if somebody as well-known as Kovacic is prepared to effectively to endorse this product, then it must be okay. And you know my view on crypto, it's absolutely fine as a vehicle for payment across borders. I've got no issue with that whatsoever. It is not an investment in exactly the same way as, you know, having 30 euros in the drawer next to your bed for the next time you go to France. That's not an investment in euro. Yeah, that just happens to be a means of buying things. And that's the purpose. Money itself is not an investment. It is supposed to be a known store of value, which tends to be the case most of the time, unless you get high inflation. Yeah, but you know, and clearly there's issues with inflation at present. But in the case of cryptocurrencies, their value is ridiculously volatile. So it's failing in the first purpose of money. And I've got nothing but sympathy for these people who have been blindsided, or perhaps they've been a bit greedy. Yeah. You know, and it was exactly the same with Football Index. We saw a report into Football Index came out recently. Some really, really sad stories. People have lost thousands and thousands of pounds. But get rich quick schemes don't work. It's as simple as that.
I don't think there'll be much sympathy around the world for this story, Kieran, but Spartak Moscow has axed its second-tier club, citing financial problems.
Yes, and it was an interesting press release from Spartak Moscow. Their second team had been playing in the second tier of Russian football. But one of the things which we picked up from doing this show is where do clubs get the majority of their money from? It tends to be from sponsorship arrangements and also from TV money. Well, in the case of Spartak Moscow, their kit deal with Nike has been cancelled. Nike wants to distance themselves, so they've lost their commercial income and they've been banned from participation in UEFA competitions for not 22, 23, so they ain't going to get any money from there. As a consequence, they're skin.
Yeah.
So what they've done is they've said that these are the new realities of football, which is a funny way of saying some psychopath in the Kremlin has decided to kill a load of people in Ukraine and destroy the country. What they're going to do instead is that they're going to focus on their academy and the youth team, and that's going to be their setup. So the second team has gone.
Also in Russia, Kieran, and again, there won't be much sympathy for this, but Anzhi Makhachkala, which at one point was the richest club in the world, home to Roberto Carlos and Samuel Eto'o, rather oddly, they will actually cease to exist in a week or two.
Yes, this is a case of somebody comes in, funds a club, and then loses interest. Never happens in the UK, does it? they had fallen. At one stage, why were the likes of Eto'o and Roberto Carlos willing to play for them? Because they were just willing to pay crazy, crazy wages. And when that didn't generate the level of success, both domestically and internationally, that the owner had craved, he effectively turned the taps off. And that was a few years ago. The club has been in decline since. But now the Russian equivalent of the EFL has said, we're not even prepared to give you a license because there's no evidence that you've got the ability to fulfill your fixtures. And for fans of Anzhi, again, I've got sympathy also for those players who had contracts which still had time available. They are still working people. They are still you cannot castigate everybody in relation to what's happened here. But it was coming before the invasion, before the war of Ukraine, and that's accelerated things since because nobody wants to have anything to do with Russian football. Mm.
I was going to enlighten our listeners, Kieran, and tell them that Anzhi Makhachkala is actually based in Dagestan. And it then occurred to me that you would inevitably have played cricket with somebody whose nickname was Dagestan. probably the the Prowler's best mate. This next story, Kieran, I had to double check this with Guy to see if he'd got this right, and he insists that it's true. But apparently, a report indicates that England fans who are going to Qatar, if they want to watch every game and we get to the final, it's going to cost them £7,000.
Yes. We want England to get to that final as well, let's be honest. And I can understand the accusations of hypocrisy in doing so, because you know, we're taking a high moral stance against Russia and being critical of what's happened there. And we're effectively saying, Qatar, for four or five weeks, we pretend you're a cuddly country. Which was exactly, of course, the same in Russia in the World Cup in 2018. Yeah. And, you know, football is a force for good, as Infantino says. And look at the progress that's been made in Russia since then. the issue as far as England are concerned is that that flights aren't cheap. You know, I had hoped that, that there would have been a huge increase in the number of flights to Qatar, and they would be at reasonable prices. Well, all the flights have effectively been snapped up. But the big issue is in terms of accommodation.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I've been fortunate enough to, you know, to go to World Cups, and the last one I went to was South Africa. And we had, you know, I went with my mates. We had a brilliant 2 weeks there, however long it was. And we used Airbnb. You know, and we went from place to place, and we had an absolutely fantastic time in both Cape Town and elsewhere, Port Elizabeth. You know, absolutely brilliant. But we were organized well in advance. Airbnb's not quite the same in Qatar. Yeah, it's not really a scene there.
Yeah.
All of the hotels are effectively booked up.
Yeah.
The hotels are charging premium prices. So therefore, what you have to do, you're going to have to go to potentially to Saudi, and therefore fly from Saudi or get transport from Saudi back to Qatar for the matches. Or they're even now talking about using cruise ships offshore. A cruise ship can hold, you know, thousands and thousands of people, and using those, but they don't look particularly cheap either. And yeah, I don't want to paint people in a bad light. If I was going to the World Cup in November, and I've made a decision, probably give that one a swerve. The idea of being on a cruise ship with 6,000 other blokes who might have had a scoop or two, wouldn't really be my idea of fun either.
I'll tell you what, though, if that new Disney cruise ship was out there, I might do that. That'd be great. But no, the 6,000 other blokes would put. I'm going to be interested here to see how many fans actually do go to Qatar, because anecdotally, I'm hearing stories from a lot of people who have been to most World Cups in their lifetime. They're doing exactly the same as you did. They're avoiding this one like the plague, mainly for cost reasons, I have to say. But from FIFA to UEFA, and their head of security, Zeliko Pavlicha, had Alexander Seferin as best man at his wedding. And by amazing coincidence, Kieran, he was hired for his job just 2 months after Seferin was elected president of UEFA. And I think before you answer this question, Kieran, we should point out that UEFA have had at least the courtesy to apologise for the way fans were treated at the Champions League final, way too late, and it took too long, but they have apologised. And indeed, it must be some consolation for those Liverpool fans who are still getting the tears out of their eyes that the head of French police has said that he made up certain of the facts, in particular that 40,000 Scousers had turned up without tickets, and he regrets that tear gas was used on these imaginary people. So that's progress. Okay, you mentioned progress in Russia, Kieran. That at least is some sort of progress. No consolation whatsoever. But back to the sheer coincidence that a man who was the best man at somebody's wedding then got a job when the best man took over the person for whom he was best man. I'm confusing myself here, Kieran, but it's wrong. Whatever happened.
Well, it does raise the spectre of cronyism and nepotism. And, you know,
corruption
we
was
see
what
that
I was going for, Kieran. That's the word I was looking for. that's but I know how antsy producer guy gets when I use words like that, which is why I was getting confused with who was best man for who. But whoever it is, it's wrong.
Yes, and I think, you know, as you raised the much broader issue, was the quality of security, and it looks like the planning in respect of what happened at the Champions League final, where both fans of Liverpool and Real Madrid, but you know, certainly Liverpool fans seem to have been suffered far to a far greater extent. You could tell that before the start of the match, because there were far bigger gaps in the Liverpool seat area. I always take the view that when I'm hiring somebody to do a job, I look for three criteria. Do I like you? Do I trust you? Can you do the job? Not, are you my best man? You know, you shouldn't be doing things on a mate's basis. Because mates are good for some things. It doesn't mean they're necessarily great at jobs which they end up being paid. And well, also
to be,
from
to be fair, Kieran, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it does fulfil two of those criteria because he must like him if he's his best man, and he must trust him because he's got rather an expensive ring to look after. So 2 out of 3 is not bad. We don't know if he's any good at his job.
And I guess the best man's also got a few stories which he might be encouraged not to mention in the best man speech. So,
are you implying that's why he got the job, because he didn't do the stories?
Well, I would never. You know me. That'd be very cynical.
It would be cynical, and that's not you, Kieran.
Exactly. I think it looks poor from the perspective of UEFA, who are trying to present themselves as the good guys of football following the collapse of Super League. But, you know, it's a bit like, saying that that hanging's better than a firing squad, you know, when it comes to Super League versus UEFA, because they have not covered themselves in glory. They have increasingly given away power, control and larger sums of money to the legacy big clubs, the elite, and they must take some responsibility for what happened in Paris. Although my personal view is that the majority of that responsibility should be directed towards the French authorities.
Yeah, quite right. Father's Day is just around the corner, and our friends at Manscaped are here to ensure all the father figures out there are looking daddy material this June. Manscaped's Performance Package 4.0, which includes their signature Lawnmower 4.0, is the perfect bundle to tackle any and all old man hair from head to toe. This right here, my friends, is no dad joke. Treat him or yourself and join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code PRICEOFFOOTBALL at manscaped.com. Trust me, his dad bod will thank you.
And look, folks, we appreciate that for many of us, Father's Day can be a sensitive day. Both myself, Kevin, and producer Guy, we've lost our old man. So this isn't an insult to anybody out there listening. But if you do fancy going for this, Manscaped, it's designed with dads in mind. And the Performance Package 4.0 is here just in time for your old man's special day.
So get 20% off and free shipping with the code PRICEOFFOOTBALL at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code PRICEOFFOOTBALL. Shake what your mama gave you? Nah, shake what your daddy gave you.
I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
We do have a couple of questions to get through, Kieran, in this strange hybrid of a pod. The first question comes from David Martin. David says, which Premier League manager has spent the most? I know the manager doesn't decide how much he's paid, but I'd love to settle a barroom argument. We are guessing it's Pep, and then maybe Jose and money-adjusted David O'Leary at Leeds. And I shall pause here, Kieran, just to spare a thought for poor Uncle Terry, who will again be spinning in his concrete underneath that flyover at the idea of somebody settling a barroom argument with a question to a podcast rather than with pool cues and broken chairs.
Well, it is by far Mourinho.
It is. Oh, okay.
I do actually have a day job, and I work with some proper smart people. So a few months ago, myself and my colleague Jason Laws, we created the Laws Maguire Index, which is a bit like the Duckworth Lewis method for cricket, in terms of transfer spending, to convert historic transfer spends into those using the increase in revenues over the 30 years of the Premier League, and effectively, you know, making inflation adjustments. And in the five transfer windows in which Mourinho was in charge of Chelsea, and this is just for his first act of manager or coach at Chelsea in 2003, he spent the equivalent, we're talking just five windows, £858 million.
Caramba.
Which knocks everybody else into a cocked hat. And you know, little David O'Leary, and you know, we always used to see David O'Leary appear in those matches, and, oh, we're just a small club, and we're just fighting against the system, blah, 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 blah. He actually didn't spend as much money as perhaps he was criticised with. Some of his signings on the qualitative basis weren't great, players perhaps not necessarily in their prime. And clearly there were some pretty embarrassing issues, such as, you know, the legendary signing of Seth Johnson. But that was nothing to do with David O'Leary. That was to do with the what happens when testosterone and cash are mixed in the same pot.
Yeah, when you mix testosterone with testosterone as well, that's a volatile. You put me to shame, Kieran, I have to say, because if I get downtime, and I do, I tend to go to the pub and squander it there, whereas you come up with an index that tells you how much historically football managers may have paid. Andrew Dawson says, the biggest issue with lower league clubs often seems to be that owners regularly pump money in, so the club budgets their spending on that basis, and then all of a sudden the owner stops, and quite simply the management of the club is screwed and in trouble. Could the Football League, asks Andrew, enforce a deposit system based upon the owner's spending level?
Yes, the idea of an owner bond has been suggested to the fan-led review by somebody whose name I can't mention, but he's on this podcast, presently talking to you. And
well, you've narrowed that down a little bit, Kieran.
I've narrowed it down a little bit, yes. But also, you know, I was at a Law in Sport conference a few weeks ago, and our friend Nick DeMarco, he said this would be a way of trying to disincentivize bad behavior, and I'm a great believer in incentivizing things. If you encourage people to do the right things, they tend to do the right things. You know, it's even simple things like remember when supermarkets were forced to sell carrier bags for 5 or 10 pence each?
Yeah,
people started reusing carrier bags. Yeah, even though the money involved was not significant for some. So if we have an owner bond that you have to put down at the date of acquiring the club, this could act as a disincentive for rogue owners, people who are trying to use the club as a property asset and so on. If you combine that with a slightly more enhanced form of owners and directors test and regulation, then, you know, the cowboys, the tire kickers, the wrong-uns, the ne'er-do-wells and so on, they will simply move on to another industry. So I think Andrew's suggestion is one which has merit. It works in other industries, because if you book a holiday via a travel agent who's with Atoll, then if the travel agent goes bust, you're covered. It's the same. It's always Abta, I think, rather than Atoll. It's the same with tour operators. So we do see effectively a collective insurance policy, which is contributed to by the industry, in which case it would have to be here, the owners, which I think would certainly assist the industry in terms of preventing some people, but not all, who you don't want connected with the game, getting involved.
I am definitely going to have to make sure Ali doesn't listen to this pod under any circumstances, because you have touched on a raw nerve there.
Ooh.
One of the very many things that drives up the wall about my behaviour is the fact that we now probably have about 278 bags for life. Because I'm just congenitally, as she says, I'm just congenitally unable to leave the house and go to Sainsbury with one of the bags we've already got. And she does, she's got this like origami folding thing where she makes a plastic bag or a bag for life really tiny, and I still just forget to take them out with me. It's a big commitment, a bag for life, by the way, you know, as our Smith says, but we've got so many I've got to the stage now where I try and distract her if I'm coming home shopping and she's in. I'll phone up and say, I think the garden needs doing. I'll try and run in and chuck it all in the fridge. Speaking of loved ones, Kieran, Ben Connor has a question about the Tracy Crouch fan-led review.
Oh,
sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G. And Ben says one of the recommendations in Tracy Crouch's fan-led review is that fans should be represented on club boards. It's not a strictly financial matter, but it's an interesting question. Do you know how clubs would decide which fans should represent the broader fans' views? If clubs have an existing fans' trust, would they be in pole position to take up seats on the board? And what happens if fans of the club aren't happy with the fans that are chosen? I haven't read it in as much detail as you had, Kieran, but are there recommendations for which fans should represent broader fans' views?
Not as yet. And I take on board Ben's comments with regards to the trust, because sometimes you can get more than one group of fan representatives. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a bit like the people's Judean front versus the Judean front of the people, and so on. So there is a concern there. But as there is nothing concrete. I think, you know, it was the principle of having a shadow board that the fan-led review lent its support to. As far as what clubs can do, because some clubs are trying to preempt the Tracy Crouch report, and this could be one of two reasons. A, they've seen the light, they've seen the benefit that actually having liaison with fan groups and accepting that fans are actually quite an important stakeholder in the game is to the benefit of the clubs.
Yeah.
Because the fans want success as much as the owners want. Now, the fans' success will be more geared towards what happens on the pitch. Some owners also are completely aligned with that. Some owners are more concerned about financial returns. But you know, communication, as we've seen, what happens when there's no communication? You end up with quantum art on the EFL's naughty step.
Yeah.
So communication is really useful. There are two potential vehicles or two potential methods through which we could go through. First of all, as Ben suggested, we could go through the supporters' trust, where the supporters' trust will say, well, we will have a nominee, one of the members of our board will go on board, or two people, or whatever the number it's going to be. The concern here is that at some football clubs there are official supporters clubs,
yeah,
which are effectively rubber stamped by the club. Now, I've spoken to fans from a variety of clubs, and I'm not going to name the clubs particularly here, that there might be reservations about. Some of these fan groups might have too cozy a relationship with the existing board or owners.
Yeah.
And therefore, are they acting completely independently and representing the views of the fans? Or it could be one of two things. A, they're patsies, or B, they get starstruck by the opportunity to, you know, have tea and biscuits three times a year with in the boardroom of the club. And that's their main concern, and the thing that they're most interested in is, well, yeah, they're going to suggest a couple of players who they think are quite good, or they've got a really good idea for what the away kit should look like, and it goes no further than that. The other alternative is to have some form of voting system. And again, you know, I can only speak from personal experience. You know, at Brighton, we've got one of these fan representative groups has been set up, and season ticket holders have been able to vote for those people. And to be fair to the club, it sort of split people into categories as well to make sure that there's broader representation. It's not a perfect system. There has been some criticism, but then there's always been criticism from people that you know don't get chosen. So that's where we are. Either the supporters trust or some form of voting system. But as far as the fan-led review, it really didn't go into, I don't think, that granular level of detail. It just said, let's get the fan reps, not the process.
Speaking of preempting, Kieran, this is an issue we're going to be talking about on the next pod. A couple of Premier League clubs, including Palace, have already anticipated that gambling sponsors won't be allowed on shirt fronts the season after next, and are looking to change this. I believe Newcastle or another one that are talking about ending their current shirt sponsorship, or certainly another. There's a couple of Premier League teams looking to do that, and we'll be discussing that in some detail on Thursday. Our pre-penultimate question, Kieran, comes from Tony Hereford, who has asked a question before but hasn't indicated whether his name is Tony Hereford or whether he's Tony from Hereford. So if he asks another question, Tony, if you're listening, until I get that information, I'm going to have you down as a bot and not take any more questions from you until such time as you've indicated which of these photographs is not a boat. Tony says, with regard to the issue of parachute payments, which is something we've talked about a lot recently, and their justification or not, my question is, since the start of the Premiership, how many clubs have been promoted to the Premiership while in receipt of parachute payments? Do we know this, Kieran?
I went on to Wikipedia. I went on to the Football League records like everybody else does.
A bit casual by your standards.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but Wikipedia didn't tell me, so I had to therefore go through the table for each season. Since parachute payments started in 2006-07, of the 45 clubs that have been promoted, 18 of those have been promoted within 3 years of being relegated and therefore in receipt of parachute payments. So that is a significant number.
Yeah.
Do parachute payments give a financial advantage to clubs in receipt of them? Yes, they do. Should they therefore be scrapped? Well, this is where I think we need to take a more of a holistic view.
Yeah.
The purpose of parachute payments is to try to reduce stroke eliminate the chances of clubs becoming becoming insolvent and therefore going into administration following relegation from the Premier League. Has that been achieved? Yes, it has. So it's achieved its primary objective. What it has done is it's caused a secondary problem. This needs to be addressed by looking at the overall distribution of money within the football hierarchy. I've done loads of spreadsheets. I've done loads of models for this. Whenever I suggest something, somebody always comes back to me and says, well, I don't like that because we end up with less money. But that's the point of redistribution. You know, redistribution is not giving everybody more money. It doesn't work like that. And there's a further issue, which is sort of the sideline to Tony's question. There are far too many clubs who are being promoted from the EFL to the Premier League and then getting relegated straight away again.
Yeah.
So that's further indication. It's not parachute payments in themselves that's the problem. It's the much broader issue, which is not being addressed, and there seems to be no enthusiasm for it. Although, I do believe the Premier League has put forward some suggestions which have gone down well with some parties, but not others. I'll say no more than that.
Interesting, Kieran. That figure you gave, 18 out of 40, I would have thought that would have been much higher. But that's interesting. I mean, it's still significant, but in my mind, it seems to me there are a lot more clubs coming straight back up because of parachute payments. But
again, well, what we have seen is that in the early years of parachute payments, it was quite uncommon. Clubs like Birmingham City and Reading and so on. And there has been an acceleration of bounce back clubs. If we take the last 2 years, COVID had an awful lot to do with it, because the benefit of parachute payments is hugely amplified if you have no match day income. There's too many people just looking at things in isolation, and that's why you need, and I know I sound like a management consultant here, this is why you need holistic solutions.
Yeah, do you know, it strikes me, Kieran, that Perhaps we need a special pod just to discuss one or two of the issues, to actually talk through properly what amortization means and what parachute payments mean, because, I mean, these are subjects that are crucial to football, but they're subjects that sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, these things go out of my head. So I think we need to have maybe a debate about parachute payments or something. Yeah. Well, I think that'd be really interesting.
Perhaps we could get a panel.
Yeah,
that'd be, yeah, we could get two or three people, the yayers and the nayers, because it's a bit like Brexit in that people form an opinion, and that opinion is reinforced regardless of taking a broader view. I don't care what people's views are of Brexit. You know, my view, there was a 60-40 advantage of going down one course of action rather than the other. It wasn't 100 versus zero, as we are seeing from all the parties. Unless you look at everything on a macro scale, then I don't think good decision-making is made.
Yeah. I like that idea of yours of the panel, Kieran. Do let me know how it goes, won't you? I shall look forward to listening to it. Our final question comes from Gareth Aubrey. I hope somewhere in a previous life was a musical entertainer, because that's a proper Victorian musical entertainer's name. If it was Aubrey Gareth, it'd be even better. But Gareth Aubrey says, would it be possible to make a reasonable estimate of the total cost of returning a club to their current league position if they went out of business? I ask because with my silver tongue, and we knew Gareth was a lawyer because there was an invoice attached to the question. Gareth says, I know that contracts can't have things that are just there to penalise someone who breaks them, can't they? But they can include compensation for any costs arising from the breach. Could such an estimate also be helpful in setting a benchmark for the resources that an owner would need to show when buying a club in the first place? I mean, I think that's a really interesting question. It's interesting for Bury fans, for example, or anybody who's unfortunately, tragically having to consider a Phoenix club, just how much would it cost? I mean, if the worst happened to Derby, for example, how much would it cost to get them back to where they are now, or mid-table in the Championship where they were before the points deduction?
Yeah, I absolutely think it's a corker here from Gareth. Yeah. My view is, it would vary hugely on a club-by-club basis. We've got Manchester United at one end of the scale and we've got Morecambe at the other in terms of the level of crowds and so on. What we would have to do here is to say, well, okay, if we are looking to return a club to the EFL or to the Premier League, there's a number of issues. First of all, you've got to look at your asset base. So we've got property assets, we've got player assets. Now, if you are, if you are Crawley Town in League Two, your player assets and your property assets are going to be a lot lower, a lot smaller than those of a Premier League club. And also, how long would it take you to get back to where you've come from? Because if the club is effectively kicked out, so we saw Macclesfield Town go into liquidation, and then we've now got Macclesfield FC starting in a much lower tier. So how many divisions do you have to go up before you are restored? Because the chances are you're going to be losing money in each of those divisions because you're trying to get there as quickly as you can. So there's a time issue, there's an asset issue, and there's an owner model issue. So is that going to be through debt? Is it going to be through owner injections? Is it going to be on a sustainable basis? So I can't give Gareth a figure for an individual club, or can't give Gareth an overall figure or a general figure, because it would involve a lot of calculations, a lot of effort. You give me some numbers, and I'm happy as a pig in plops. But it would take quite a bit of time, and it would significantly vary from club to club.
That's a very good question, Gareth. Thank you. The check is in the post. And thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page, including Andrew Shepherd, David Brereton, Paul Cockerton, ex-Maka, or possibly Jamaka, if they are an Inca, Adrian and Robert Ryan. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod along with them, then please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran McGuire for his customary farewell.
Thank you very much, folks, and for all those people that support us on Patreon. We're genuinely chuffed. We do try to put out a show which is slightly different from traditional football, and it's nice that you appreciate that. That's one way of supporting the podcast for as little as £1 a month. But there's other ways you can do that as well, and one of those ways is to go onto your podcast app and to give us a review. According to producer Guy, it impacts upon the algorithms. It impacts therefore upon our place as far as the rankings are concerned, and also when we approach potential guests, they tend to look at the reviews. And some of them still come on the show after that because it doesn't matter. And you might have said, well, yeah, today's show has been a bit of a downer, you know, with what's happened at Derby and Severin's cronyism and all of the people that have lost money through crypto and so. So you might want to cheer it up a bit. So who better to present the show than Seth from Emmerdale and Jeffrey Boycott? Yeah, that would perk people up, wouldn't it?
Oh, that would inevitably turn into a fight. I'd love to see that. That would be a man with a cricket bat against a man with a hoe. That would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. The Price of Football. Price of Football.